Hi, you're with Truth News Radio Australia on the 3rd of September 2016. My name is Hereward Fenton and it's a great pleasure to be with you today. Today I'm going to begin with a bit of a chat about same-sex marriage in Australia. Now, those of you who are Australians will no doubt be aware that our federal government is moving toward a plebiscite on the question of same-sex marriage, and this is an attempt to appeal to democratic process, to be inclusive of the community, rather than to simply vote in Parliament, using the majority in the House of Representatives to push legislation through. The Prime Minister is supportive of same-sex marriage, but many within his party are against it, and indeed many within the Labor Party are against it as well. But then the majority, it would appear, of Australians are supportive of same-sex marriage, but that indeed is not 100% certain either. The polls are not totally clear on this. And what's interesting is that as we move towards this proposed plebiscite, one of the political parties which is the most supportive of gay rights, the Greens, has actually come out against the whole idea of a plebiscite. I've got an article here from the ABC from the 28th of August. Greens to vote against same-sex marriage plebiscite. The Greens will vote against legislation to enable a same-sex marriage plebiscite when it is brought to Parliament, voicing fears that a hateful campaign could lead to suicides among the LGBTIQ, boy, that's a long acronym, community. The coalition, and for those who don't know what that means, this—I don't know if this is a global new terminology—but the IQ on the end of that acronym is intersex and queer. So the full LGBTIQ stands for lesbian, gay, bisexual, transsexual, intersex, and queer. Now, I've attempted to understand what intersex and queer mean, but even though I've gone to the websites and read about it, I'm still rather confused as to what those terms really mean. I have a rough idea what the other ones mean. But as you can see, this is a big community in Australia, or a diversity of plurality of human behavioural choices, which which increasingly are being, we are being told that this must be integrated to the level of normality, of total acceptability, as opposed to, for example, people who might be considered fetishists, who are not to be considered as part of the norm, or people who have sexual proclivities which are illegal, such as pedophiles. Obviously, even though, and despite the fact that in the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, DSM, I think 5, the eminent experts who contributed to that did use the word sexual orientation for pedophilia. And they've used that, and it's cropped up a number of times, that pedophilia should be considered an orientation. But, of course, gay lobby groups are horrified at this because, of course, homosexual sexual orientation is accepted widely as being something that that is normal and certainly good, in the sense that it's just another form of human behaviour, just like being left-handed or right-handed. You know, some people are oriented towards the same sex. But if we were to include things like paedophilia in that, then what would we be saying? We'd be saying that behaviour which is criminal is just like being left-handed or right-handed. But again, there is a lot of academic research in that direction, and that has not gone away. But let's return to this question of formalizing the concept of gay same-sex unions by making it part of what we call marriage. So the article here from the ABC, just continuing there, the coalition has pledged to hold a national vote to decide whether gay marriage should be legalised and needs the support of an additional 9 senators to pass the legislation. The 3 Nick Xenophon team senators and Darren Hinch have cast doubt over the plebiscite, and if they vote against it, it means the government needs Labor's support. The opposition and the Greens have called for a vote in Parliament, although the latter is the only party to confirm its members will block the legislation. Greens leader Richard Di Natale told the ABC the plebiscite would be harmful and divisive and would result in hate speech directed at the LGBTI community. We're speaking to people in the sector right now who are worried that we'll see young people take their lives on the back of a hateful and divisive debate in the community. Greens LGBTIQ spokesperson Janet Rice said that Australia had fallen behind the rest of the world on same-sex marriage. In a statement, Senator Rice called on Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull to stand up to the extreme wing of his party. We need a free vote in the Parliament as soon as possible. We could have legislation passed next week and wedding bells ringing this spring. Now, the angle here that's being taken is that legislating same-sex marriage is a conscience decision. It is not something that should be up to popular opinion. People could argue, well, you know, people might vote, you know, in a plebiscite to bring back public hangings, and we don't think that's good. We wouldn't put that in a plebiscite. So we shouldn't put in a plebiscite a question about whether you should allow two guys to get married or two ladies to get married, because that is to be considered an inalienable right. Now, I've got an interesting video to play to you that comes from a traditional perspective on marriage, which gets into some of the reasons why maybe we should not just give a carte blanche, a rubber stamp to same-sex marriage. But before I play that, I want to give you a bit of my own thinking on this. And it's very complex. And I think one of the problems we've got in today's society is that everything has become oversimplified in people's minds because they don't think. And they don't think about consequences. They don't think about the true meaning of what's going on around them. They don't really understand the importance of symbols. And this is largely a result of the very successful program of marketing and propaganda and media that has taken over our lives, as was predicted by many eminent thinkers and intellectuals in the last century, that people would end up being controlled and manipulated in a soft totalitarian sense, where they basically voluntarily choose their own kind of servitude, in the sense that they are incapable of thinking beyond what the dictates of the elites who actually do control things have decided they should think. And we are moving towards, I believe we are moving towards a society where the whole structure of male and female, of marriage, of family, and of raising children is to be blown apart. And we're moving towards a really quite frightening, dehumanized, statist model of the individual, of the family, and of child rearing. And even right down to, you know, conception, we're moving towards a kind of industrial concept of what human society is. And it's almost like a chilling parallel to the Matrix. There's even, I've seen some articles popping up recently that demonstrate the capability of bringing a child to full gestation inside an artificial womb. This obviously can be done. I mean, with science, with technology, you can do almost anything if you keep working on it. And indeed, you know, we already have artificial insemination. We already have a lot of surrogacy going on. Well, why not be able to bring a child, you know, to inseminate and then to gestate an embryo in a completely artificial womb? And that would then, of course, remove the entire concept of whether it is a, you know, whether it has a mother or a father. It would simply be a machine that that gave that that person its first 9 months of life. And you know, why is this bad? You know, why am I saying there's something wrong with that? Well, indeed, this is a philosophical question, which I don't think people are even asking, except a lot of people who are considered to be right-wing, people who are considered to be conservative, people who are considered to be bigots, people who are by the left relegated and pigeonholed as being some sort of fringe scourge upon society. These people are actually thinking about it quite a lot and thoughtfully. But the left, which really represents in our society the bulk of people who get up, go to work, you know, come home, turn on the TV, the people that basically run everything, they are the left. That is the left in our society, and certainly in Australia, and I know in a lot of other modern Western countries. See, they never think about this. And if they start to veer in that direction, it's called conspiracy thinking. And there's been so much negative propaganda just about any sort of conspiracy thinking that they veer away from it just like a trained animal will. It's, you know, like with a cattle prod that's been sort of stung just for even like straying over too far in a direction that they're not supposed to go, let alone actually really grappling with the issues. And the issues are, you know, where is our, what are we modelling our society on? What is the structure of our society? And I believe that there are elites at work who are quite clear about it, and in their minds, they know what they want. They want a fragmented, atomized society of kind of organic units who are split off from the sense of their biological gender identity, who can be controlled, manipulated, who can have advertising and political marketing poured into their brains to the extent that they have a society which they can completely control and manage as you would manage cattle. We are going to break. You with Truth News Radio Australia. More coming. Don't go away. Welcome back, you're with Truth News Radio Australia. And just finishing off the thought there from the last segment, the importance about same-sex marriage, you have to understand, it's about the symbol and what that symbol means and how that symbol is part of a whole program which contains a lot of other symbols and what it is on a macro level moving society towards. Now, of course, the marketing campaign for same-sex marriage focuses on the concept of love. You know, two blokes who love each other should be able to get married. And if you say anything against that, you're a total bastard. You know, you're just a disgusting, horrible, evil person that you want to stop two loving gay men or women from sanctifying that beautiful, wonderful love in a institution called marriage. And that's it. No more thinking about it. Everything I said in the last segment, is completely beyond people's ability to think about. They can't see the connections. Maybe if they were forced to listen to what I just said in a closed room, and you just force them to listen to that and then ask them to write an essay in response to it, maybe they would begin to think. We'd have to actually, but there would actually have to be pressure, coercion, but that's of course not going to happen, and I wouldn't want that to happen. But people who are outside of the arena of thinking about it that I've raised in today's show simply cannot think about it. And they get quite angry and hostile if you even bring it up. But now let me bring up another angle on this, which is a very well-made video that I'm not completely on board with, but I still think it's actually very well worth listening to, and it is made in support of the traditional concept of marriage. Let me play to it. I may not have time to play the whole thing, but I'll play some of it, and you can have a think about that in conjunction with what I've said in the previous segment. So here we go. This is actually on YouTube, and it's called Making Sense of Marriage.
Well, I'm here today to discuss marriage, trying to understand and make sense of marriage, and also place it in the wider discussions about same-sex marriage. Firstly, I'll be sharing some of the very basic facts about the human experience that have made sense to most people to believe that marriage is between a man and a woman. Second thing, I'm going to point out a few obstacles and difficulties that people have who argue in favour of same-sex marriage that they often face when they make their case. I am, like most of you, a relatively young-ish person just trying to think my way through this issue and grapple with it myself. I'm going to say that majority of people think that when it comes to this particular issue, they think like this. Marriage is a great thing. We all agree with that. The only difference is who we should let get married. So another way of sort of saying that is everyone sort of thinks, yeah, well, marriage is great. We're all on the same page about that. You know, it's just some people have got issues with gay people and therefore they have issues with gay marriage. Or some people don't have issues with gay people and therefore they're okay with gay marriage. So that's the main sort of divide, how people think or feel towards gay people. But I think there's one really obvious fact why that's the wrong way of understanding this issue. And that's because there actually are quite a few gay people and also kids of gay parents who love their parents dearly and who don't think gay marriage is a good thing. So that wouldn't fit that narrative before. That would seem just very confusing. Gay people against gay marriage? How does that sort of work? So what's the alternative way of understanding this issue? Well, I think that it's actually the other way around. It's not what you think or feel about gay people that reflects what you stand on this issue. It's what you think marriage is that reflects where you stand on the issue of gay marriage. And contrary to popular presentation, I think there are actually two very different views, conceptions, pictures, or understandings of what marriage is. And the first view has been around for a very long time, pretty much since the start of recorded history. It basically thinks that there's something pretty special about men and women. Their bodies don't really make sense just on their own, and that when men and women come together and fall in love and fall into bed together and make babies and make a family, that it's generally a good thing trying to keep this bundle of things together, right? So under this view, the quote-unquote traditional view of marriage, things like husbands and wives, fathers and mothers, its connection to family life, the importance of it being a permanent relationship, till death to us part type thing, as well as faithful, to you and to you alone, are sort of what makes sense of the whole point of why marriage is around. Now, as you'll know, there's nothing particularly religious about that particular view, but that's existed alongside a much more recent view of marriage that's gained a lot of traction in the last 30 or 40 years or so. And this particular understanding of marriage places much more emphasis on the intimacy of the couple, their emotional fulfillment, their happiness as a couple. It's popularly represented in popular culture, TV, radio, film. Under this view, family life or having kids is completely optional. It's just up to each couple if they want. There's no sort of inherent connection to it. It's just an option. If they want it, that's great. If they don't, not a problem. Now, I think what is clear from understanding those two particular views is there's nothing particularly very homosexual about either of them. There's nothing particularly gay about any of them. There's also nothing particularly or uniquely religious about them as well. So I think if you just understand that, why is it the case then that some people think that there are these strange people who would be against same-sex marriage? Well, I think that's the case if, like most people believe, that there's only one view of marriage. It's that newer, sort of sexier soulmate version of marriage, the idea of marrying your BFF, your best friend forever. You know, this is your number one relationship. And if you think that everyone believes that view of marriage, then you're going to be baffled why some people would be against gay people being married, right? Because if gay people and lesbians can form those sorts of deep, committed relationships just like heterosexuals can, then why would some people be against that? So now you know that it's not because someone's homophobic or bigoted that they don't think that's the right way to go. It's because they have an alternate, a different conception of marriage. But it's not the case that it has to be motivated out of fear or hatred or animus in any sense to gay people. Nothing of what I've said about either of those two views proves that either one is right. Okay? I've just sort of laid them out there in front so you can see. So that's even before you get to the same sex bit. You can just sort of realize that there's two different views about marriage. What it shows in this current debate is it's not about how we think or feel towards gay people that's the real issue. It's much more about what particular idea of marriage we have. Now, some people might say, okay, well, that second view of marriage, the sort of romantic soulmate one, that's the view of marriage that I think is right. It sounds really good. And let's be honest, there's many parts about it that are obviously true and are obviously very important, things like intimacy and love and the importance of commitment. So many people sort of think, okay, well, if that's the case and that's what marriage is, then why don't we allow gay people to get married? Well, here are a few concerns I've always had with that just particular idea of what marriage is, the idea of its sort of emotional, deep emotional fulfillment. Here are some obstacles, I think. The first one is it becomes really unclear why it should be just between two people. And when you think about it, many of us could be in loving and committed relationships with more than one person. In fact, in the US and many parts of the world, many different polyamorous or polygamous groupings of people of multiple number who say they're all in loving, committed relationships with people. So why, under this particular view of marriage, is marriage being just about love and commitment, is it limited just to two people? I'm not sure.
Okay, I'm just going to leave it there because I want to cover another aspect of this, which he raised there at the beginning of the talk, which is about gay people who are against gay marriage. Now, the speaker there, her name, I believe, is Matt Frad. He's made a lot of interesting points, and he gets into some of the other questions about how the definition of marriage might end up becoming so blurred when the only criteria for it is that the people love each other, and you know, you could have multiple partners. It could be just a very short-term thing, because, of course, if you fall out of love, you wouldn't want to continue to be married and all these things, and these are all important things to consider. But let's have a look at the question of gay people who've actually come out against gay marriage. Now, if you do a search on Google, you'll find quite a lot of links if you just put in gays against gay marriage. Now, this is interesting because, and a lot of it is from mainstream media articles, you know, it's not just minor, very fringe things. It's a lot of people from gay people who are actually against gay marriage, but you'll never hear about that from the left-oriented media in Australia. You will simply never hear about that. Now, we are going to break. I'll continue with that when we come back. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. Hi, welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. And I just want to now survey some articles in relation to the concept of gay people actually being against gay marriage. And I think it's very interesting when you look into some of the arguments there that that gay people are using for why they don't think same-sex couples should marry. It actually harks back to what I was saying in the first segment about marriage having a particular meaning in the context of the organic nature of society. And people who are gay can recognise that and respect that as well as anyone else. So let me just read to you a couple of quotes here. This is actually from a BBC article from 2013, The Gay People Against Gay Marriage. After France's first same-sex marriage and a vote in the UK Parliament which puts England and Wales on course for gay weddings, two US Supreme Court rulings could soon hasten the advance of same-sex marriage across the Atlantic. Now, of course, that was in 2013, and that has since happened. And, of course, things have really, really heated up and moved on from there. But some gay people remain opposed. And now here are some quotes in the article. It's demonstrably not the same as heterosexual marriage. The religious and social significance of a gay wedding ceremony simply isn't the same. That's from Jonathan Soroff, who lives in Massachusetts with his male partner Sam. He does not believe that couples of the same gender should marry, like half of his friends. We are not going to procreate as a couple. And while the desire to demonstrate commitment may be laudable, the religious traditions that have accommodated same-sex couples have had to do some fairly major contortions, says Soroff. Until the federal government recognises and codifies the rights for same-sex couples as straight ones, until the federal government recognises and codifies the same rights for same-sex couples as straight ones, equality is the goal. So why get hung up on a word? He asks. I'm not going to walk down the aisle to Mendelssohn wearing white in a church and throw a bouquet and do the first dance, says Soroff. I've been to some lovely gay weddings, but aping the traditional heterosexual wedding is weird, and I don't understand why anyone wants to do that. I'm not saying that people who want that shouldn't have it, but for me, all that matters is the legal stuff. Now, what the point here is, that I think it's just worth concentrating on, is that even gay people can recognise that marriage forms plays a role in society, which has a priority over their sexual orientations, and that is very, very important. You know, it is a priority above that, because it is about the fabric that holds society together. It is about procreation on one level. That is partly about that. But it is also symbolically about some very important things. And it's really interesting to me how people simply don't understand the importance of symbols and how they are manipulated by symbols and how it is symbols that are largely driving most political activism. And marriage is a symbol. And gays want that symbol because that confers respectability upon them. And yet the acceptability has already been enshrined in law. And with civil unions, all the legal requirements that give gay couples equal status are already there. So why is this additional symbol needed? Now, I'm going to read to you from another article from a website called No Gay Marriage, and it's authored by a gay person who's written a lot of articles on this blog. And I'll just read to you here some key paragraphs from one of the articles here on the blog. Gays want to be accepted by society broadly. Usually they demand that they are accepted as they are and that society's expectations morph to accommodate their lifestyles. But in rejecting civil unions as insufficient, they are revealing their hand. They don't just want acceptance as they are. They want to mimic heterosexuals. Instead of being, to paraphrase from the last century, different from equal, different but equal, they actually want to take part in the identical, goofily Baroque sacraments as the straights they often ridicule. Why, in this instance, would homosexuals want to be just like heterosexuals? Are you loud and proud or not? You're queer. Get used to it. Now, this is a very interesting point, and this again reflects to me the possibility that the gay movement has been hijacked and that gays themselves don't even understand why and how they are being used for a type of transhumanist agenda that they are not even quite aware of. Because changing the definitions of who we are was not part of the agenda of the gays who wanted to simply be free, to be who they are, to be weird, you know, to be different, to be non-conventional. That's kind of what they were. They were a rebellion against social norms. But what's happened is that very large social contingent has somehow been ridden or hijacked by an attempt now to redefine what is normal. And no one's even talking about that. I'll just continue here reading a little more from this article, written by a gay person. A straight friend noted that gays insist on being married in courthouses and not merely churches, many thousands of which will and do marry same-sex couples. After decades of fighting the state, it seems homosexuals have now made it their god. I'll just read that last sentence again. After decades of fighting the state, it seems homosexuals have now made it their god, the state. The way I see it, rings and ceremonies are for females so they can show off to their female friends, and so their female mothers can show off to their female friends and relatives. So anyway, that's probably enough on that, but you know, this just emphasizes there's a new shift that's happened, and it really came to the fore with the Supreme Court decision in the US in 2015, or was it 2014? But anyway, the Supreme Court decision that was made, and of course the President of the United States eagerly jumping on the bandwagon, and of course lighting up the White House in rainbow lights, and creating this new sense of that which used to be considered weird as normal. And yet the word queer, which of course is another kind of a synonym for the word weird, right, is part of the acronym that is now used, LGBTIQ, queer. But this is where I feel that, again, people are having their heads messed with. And, you know, who's exactly doing it? Who's in charge of this program? I don't know. But people are having their heads messed with by saying that queer is normal. It's like saying up is down. It's a bit like saying war is peace. It's a bit like saying freedom is slavery on one level. I know that's maybe pushing it to go into that Orwellian territory, but it is messing with your concepts of basic distinctions and your ability to think clearly. Queer is normal. Up is down, left is right. Right is wrong, cold is hot. And that is the new, what is called the left-wing way of thinking now. right back for one more segment. You're with Truth News Radio.
What happens in terms of creating wars is a mind manipulation technique called problem reaction solution. And it works like this. First of all, you create the problem, but you get someone else to be blamed for it. You then report that problem through the media in the way you want it reported. You get the public to react to your problem by saying something must be done, this can't go on, what are they?
Hi, welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio. I'm going to have to move on from that topic because really I can't accord it more importance than it deserves. It is important, but it's only important when you delve into the deeper meanings behind it, which no one really wants to do. And so I find it frustrating to even talk about it. But I want to read to you an article here from Paul Craig Roberts, a really nice summation of the Trump versus Hillary situation in the United States. And it's very good to see Paul Craig Roberts having such a clear and coherent understanding of this. He's a writer that I greatly respect. Trump versus Hillary, a summation. The US presidential election this November will tell whether a majority of the US population is irredeemably stupid. If voters elect Hillary, we will know that Americans are stupid beyond redemption. We don't know much about Trump, and anti-Trump propaganda rules in the place of facts. But we know many facts about Hillary. We know about her violation of classification laws and the refusal of the Democratic administration to do anything about it. The Democrats prefer to control the White House than to enforce the law, another nail in the coffin in which the rule of law in the US lies. We know from their words and deeds and material success that the Clintons are agents for Wall Street, the big banks, the military security complex, Israel, agribusiness, and the extractive industries. Their large personal fortune, approximately $120 million, and the $1,600 million in their foundation, much of which came from abroad in exchange for political favours, attests to the unchallengeable fact that the Clintons are agents for the oligarchy that rules America, indeed, that rules the American empire from Australia and Japan through North America and Western and Eastern Europe to the Russian border. We know that Hillary, like Bill, is a liar. We know that Hillary is a warmonger. We know that Hillary made the most irresponsible statement ever uttered by a presidential candidate when she declared the president of Russia to be the new Hitler, thereby raising tensions between the nuclear powers to a higher level than existed during the Cold War. We know that Hillary is allied with the neoconservatives and that her belief in the neocons' ideology of US world hegemony is likely to result in war with Russia and China. All we know about Trump is that the oligarchs who sent America's jobs overseas, who flooded the country with difficult-to-assimilate immigrants, who destroyed public education, who bailed out Wall Street and the banks too big to fail, who sacrificed American homeowners and retirees living on a fixed income, who intend to privatize both Social Security and Medicare, who have given the public killer cops relentless violations of privacy, the largest prison population in the world, and destroyed the US Constitution in order to increase executive power over the American people, are violently opposed to Trump. This opposition should tell us that Trump is the person we want in the Oval Office. Some claim that it is all a charade and that Trump is playing a role in order to elect Hillary. American politics are so corrupt that anything is possible. However, the ruling elites and their puppets seem to be genuinely concerned about Trump's challenge to their control, and they have united against Trump. They have used their money to buy up progressive websites, paid to bring the print and TV anti-Trump propaganda onto the internet, thus joining the internet prostitutes with the print, TV and NPR whores who are working overtime to demonize Trump and to elect Hillary. The entire power structure of our country is behind Hillary. Both Democratic and Republican political establishments and both ideologies, neoliberals and neoconservatives, are united behind Hillary. How much more evidence do Americans need in order to know that a vote for Hillary is a vote for their own emasculation? Apparently, Americans remain captives of their insouciance. According to news reports, a majority of voters still haven't a clue about the consequences of voting for Hillary. Posts report that Hillary is well in the lead. Are these real polls or just another prostitute lie to discourage Trump supporters? Why vote when they have already lost? The propaganda assault against Trump, vicious as it was, did not succeed during the Republican primary. Despite the media condemnation of Trump, he swept the other Republican candidates aside effortlessly. The current media demonization of Trump may fail as well. Indeed, it is so transparent that it could elect him. All that is required is for enough Americans to awake from their insouciance to recognize that it is the enemies of their own lives, their own living standards, and their own liberty who are violently opposed to Trump. If Americans cannot reach this realization, they have no future, and neither does the planet Earth. The ruling oligarchy hates Trump because he disavows war with Russia, questions the purpose of NATO, opposes the offshoring of Americans' jobs, and opposes the uncontrolled immigration that is transforming the United States into a multicultural entity devoid of unity. The oligarchs are replacing the United States with a Tower of Babel. Oligarchic power grows exponentially among the disunity of diversity. I'll read that sentence again. Oligarchic power grows exponentially among the disunity of diversity. Now just think about it then a little, folks. Think about what we were saying earlier in the show today. Think about LGBTIQ and various other things that have become emblems of diversity in society, and how this word diversity is kind of held up as an emblem in itself, as a glorious symbol, and it's actually used in conjunction with ecological, biological concepts of like ecological diversity. So like human society is like an ecology, you know, we're like a fish tank where you've got to have, you know, a certain number of jellyfish and goldfish and seaweeds. And, you know, human beings are just like an ecology. It's very important to have that diversity. Well, what a load of rubbish. Okay. Human society is not an ecology, right? We don't need to have diversity in human society. I mean, diversity in that sense is a different diversity. I mean, you can have diversity of opinion, right? And you should have diversity of opinion. But the concept of diversity now, it's like jellyfish and goldfish and, you know, sea anemones. I mean, it's that diverse. It's like you want to have completely different identifications of what a human being is, all somehow living together in harmony. Well, how is that going to happen? There has to be unity for there to be true harmony. So when we see the media so heavily pushing these memes of diversity, we have to understand, you know, well, the media is controlled by the oligarchy. And part of their control is to break down, to smash apart unity in our concept, within our society, within our mind as much as anything else. So we don't really feel we're united and connected to those around us anymore. Now, just continuing from the article here, in other words, Trump is for America and for Americans. This is why the oligarchs and their whores hate Trump. The imbecilic Americans who vote for Hillary are voting for war and their own immiseration. Possibly a vote for Trump is the same. However, in the case of Trump, we do not know that. In the case of Hillary, we most certainly do know it. And I think that is probably enough to be said on that topic. I personally don't know either. I don't know exactly what Trump will bring, but I do have a very, very clear idea of what Hillary Clinton will bring. I mean, I think we can be in no doubt about it, even though, of course, she's duplicitous. But the point is, we know and we've seen through her duplicity. We know the tactics that she's used. Trump is certainly not above being duplicitous either. And I've raised some concerns in previous shows about where he may take the country with this concept of law and order. But time will tell. Anyway, there's very little point in sort of expressing, you know, what you want to happen. What I want to happen is for people to wake up. What I want to happen is for people to understand how they're being manipulated. And that's why I do this show. I think there are trends which are emerging that indicate that that wake-up is happening on some levels. And I think the emergence of Trump in America is in some ways a sign of that. Doesn't mean he's perfect, but he's riding that, in a sense. But that's what we need to maintain our understanding, our grip on, is our own enlightenment, our own wake-up. Not thinking about what this potential leader is going to do for us. That's not the way forward. It's about thinking about what you can do for yourself to change the world as well. And with that, we end our show for this week. It's been great talking to you. I will be back next week. See you then.